Hi, I'm Francesca, a registered nutritional therapist, and you're listening to another episode of the Empowered Perimenopause podcast. Welcome. My aim is to bring you down-to-earth, conversational episodes that help you develop a deeper understanding of how your body's changing in your 40s, and most importantly, how you can support yourself throughout this wonderful transitional phase of your life. Join me for my solo episodes and also episodes with guests for fun, fresh, truthful chat on all things health and happiness in your 40s. And now onto the episode. Hi, and welcome back to another episode with me, your host, Francesca. Before we dive into today's episode, I just want to remind you or let you know about a couple of free resources that you can get right now. The first one is my Perimenopause PDF Blueprint Guide, and the other one is the recording of my Thriving Through Perimenopause Masterclass. Both of these options are available now on my website, francescaliparotti.com. The links are also in the show notes. So, in today's episode, I wanted to talk about gut symptoms and perimenopause symptoms and how they overlap. But there's actually a huge amount of crossover between gut symptoms and perimenopause symptoms. So things like bloating, constipation, diarrhea, food sensitivities, fatigue, headaches, mood swings, even heavy painful periods, they can all show up as a result of both a gut imbalance and hormonal changes. And that's because the gut and your hormones are strongly interconnected. And I've talked about this in previous episodes, but I just wanted to really drive the message home in today's episode. Because during perimenopause, the connection between the gut and our hormones, it becomes even more important and often even more vulnerable because of the way that our hormones change. So today, I just want to take you through what happens in the gut during perimenopause, what the estrobilome is, why it matters for estrogen balance, how dysbiosis, what dysbiosis is, how it can show up, how it can drive inflammation, the possibility of candida infections, and how supporting your gut can significantly support your hormone health and your symptoms as you move through perimenopause. So let's dive into some of the most significant changes that happen in the gut. So the first one is changes to your gut microbiome. So your gut microbiome is basically the community of microbes that live in your digestive tract. And those microbes include bacteria. So, you know, when we look on the back of a probiotic supplement label, it says lactobacillus, bifidobacterium, and it might say other things, other sort of strains in there. Those are bacteria. So this community of microbe includes bacteria, fungi, so that's also yeast, basically same thing. So things like, yeasts, fungi, and viruses. All of these things actually live in our microbiome, in the digestive tract. That's what the microbiome is referring to, this little population. These microbes protect you from pathogens, so harmful bacteria, harmful yeasts, infections, for example. They support your gut lining. So they support the strength, the health of your gut lining. They help break down food, and they even produce nutrients and neurotransmitters, brain chemicals. They're responsible for making, for example, serotonin, which is important for our mood. So we actually make quite a lot of our serotonin in the gut. Now, during perimenopause, fluctuating and declining estrogen, so it's starting to fluctuate erratically at first, and then the further we move through perimenopause, it starts to decline, but it's still fluctuating. That picture of estrogen can reduce both the diversity of beneficial bacteria and the amount. So we want lots of different strains of friendly bacteria living in our gut, and we want a lot of it. So it's diversity and amount that starts to get affected with that change in estrogen, particularly its decline. So that means a less protective gut environment, basically. So if we don't have as much beneficial bacteria as we had before, now we have a less protective environment in our gut. And eventually that can start to weaken our really important gut lining that we want to be strong. That can start to lead to more bloating, gas, changes in bowel habits, so loose stools, urgent stools, constipation, even things like acid reflux. You can also become more vulnerable to candida overgrowth and imbalance between the different, like the good bacteria and bad bacteria that we have in our gut in favor of the unfriendly, harmful bacteria. So that's what dysbiosis is. And then this harmful bacteria can start to dominate. And that creates, like I said, a lot of those different symptoms. But it can also all start to become a source of chronic inflammation. So chronic inflammation being this like low grade, consistent inflammatory response going on in the body. Chronic inflammation does impact so many of the symptoms we might suffer with during perimenopause and drives inflammatory situations like joint pains, headaches, migraines, brain fog, even weight gain, trouble losing weight. So we always want to look at the gut when we're thinking about any of these sorts of symptoms. The second thing is something known as the estrobilome. So estro referring to estrogen, bilome referring to this, again, like the sort of microbiome, this area in the gut. So the estrobilome is a special subset of gut bacteria that help to break down or metabolize your used estrogen. So the liver is responsible for the first couple of phases or stages of breaking down our used estrogen, hopefully in a very efficient, healthy way. And then once it's done that job, it's sort of packaged up your used estrogen into little boxes, tied a bow on top, and then sent those boxes down to the gut. It sits in the gut then waiting to be passed out of the body permanently via a bowel movement. And we want this to be efficient. We don't want bowel movements to be sluggish or not fully formed and healthy, because that used estrogen may be reabsorbed back into the body, and we don't want that. So this estrobilome, this subset of gut bacteria, ensures that your broken down estrogen is properly even further broken down and actually eliminated out of the body. When we have less beneficial bacteria and, you know, the abundance of it has gone down, the diversity is reduced, which is really common in perimenopause, as I've just said in point one, the estrobilome becomes less efficient at supporting the clearance of our used estrogen. So like I said, that means that used estrogen can then be recirculated back into your bloodstream, back into the body, contributing to estrogen dominant-like symptoms. So things like heavy, painful periods, breast pain, mood swings, worse or new PMS, fibroids or cysts even. This process in the estrobilome is also influenced by an enzyme called beta-glucuronidase. So when harmful bacteria or yeasts like candida, for example, are overgrown and take a foothold, we run into problems. So if we have this overgrowth of harmful bacteria strains, beta-glucuronidase enzyme becomes elevated. And what that enzyme can do is, remember I said that the liver packages up your used estrogen into a box and ties a bow on it and then sends it to the gut to be passed out permanently via a bowel movement. These beta-glucuronidase enzymes, they're like a set of scissors. They can go around and unsnip the bow, untie all that used estrogen that's already been processed in the liver and undo that work, basically freeing these old estrogens to re-enter circulation. Now, a healthy microbiome helps to keep beta-glucuronidase enzyme levels in check. So we'd be thinking about, okay, do I need to look at the, you know, have I had rounds of antibiotics recently or in the past, and I've never actually taken the steps to repopulate my gut with beneficial bacteria? Am I eating enough fiber? Do I chew my food really well? All of these sort of important things that help to encourage the growth of beneficial bacteria is what we'd really be starting to think about here. Because while there's any dysbiosis, this overgrowth of unfriendly, harmful bacteria and any candida overgrowth, it can raise this beta-glucuronidase. And we really don't want that any time of our life. You know, even in our 20s and 30s, we want to keep this in check. But because the gut is more vulnerable to shifts and imbalances in perimenopause, so 40 plus basically, we just want to really pay more and more attention to it now. So in my private practice with my clients, I use private testing from a lab called Genova Diagnostics. We do a comprehensive stool analysis called the GI effects test. So that can measure levels of beta-glucuronidase. It can measure, it looks at the microbiome as a whole. It's looking at all the different strains of bacteria, good, bad, harmful, protective, the yeasts. It's looking for pathogens, parasites. It's looking at various markers of digestive health as well. So it's a fantastic comprehensive test. It's not cheap. It's about £350 or more. I think the prices have just gone up, maybe 360, but it's well worth it if somebody has the budget for it. And all of my clients have the budget for it. They have the budget to work with me, but they don't have the budget to add on these expensive tests. But for the ones that do, it's really helpful just to see this, you know, this PDF full of what's telling us, you know, really good indications of what's going on and then where we can focus our attention when it comes to food and supplements and lifestyle habits, for example. But, you know, even without these results, there's still, we still want to err on the side of caution and assume that we need to support a microbiome and digestive health just sort of as a whole. And we need to remember as well, when it comes to this astrobilome, that regular bowel movements are really important. We want a well-formed kind of snake-like stool. I have these conversations all the time with clients and family members. So to me, it's nothing to be talking about the like consistency, the shape of stools. But I know for some people it can feel a bit awkward, but you do want it to come out like a snake, fully formed, and at least once a day. Ideally, you're going twice, but at least once a day. If you're having once a day a really good quality snake-like fully formed stool, you're doing really well. And that really helps to make sure that these used estrogens can leave the body for good. If we're constipated, that whole clearance process starts to stall and your symptoms worsen. So I've always had, I did quite a lot of extensive work on my gut when I was in my early or mid-20s with a nutritional therapist. In fact, it was her that inspired me to train as a nutritional therapist a few years later. But I did a lot of work and I became, you know, then I obviously studied nutritional therapy and I learned about the gut. And so I've always been able to look after my own gut health quite well. But when about 7 months ago, when I first left London and moved, me and my partner left London, moved over to Margate, moved down to Margate, it was a really big change. I think I really underestimated how big of a change it was for me on a sort of subconscious level, because for the first probably 8 weeks of being here, my bowel movements completely changed. And this was the first time I'd ever had these issues since my early 20s. So I had loose, urgent bowel movements every single morning for 8 weeks. Nothing formed ever. It just went on and on and on. And it wasn't until I thought, well, this is not good for my hormone clearance. This isn't good for my estrogen metabolism. This is going to create various symptoms that I'm lucky enough to not have had to deal with just yet. So, you know, breast pain, PMS, heavy periods, all of the sort of typical estrogen dominant like symptoms. And that is what happened for those few couple of months. But once I managed to get it all under control, I knew what to do to start sort of balancing out my microbiome a little bit more, improving my digestive health. I took a particular supplement to help support a reduction in a potential increase in this beta-glucuronidase enzyme. And I did a stool test and some Dutch testing. So I had results to work with, basically, to know what to go in with supplements wise. And I've managed to, you know, within a few weeks of doing those things, get my bowel movements back to where they should be, fully formed at least once a day. And as a result, my hormone symptoms have improved as well. It's also important to consider when we think of estrogen-driven cancers. Okay, so if we're thinking about one of the risks of estrogen-driven cancers is, of course, if we're not efficiently breaking down our used estrogen, which, as I said, the liver does it first, and then it sends that sort of broken down estrogen, that processed estrogen, into the gut where it's passed out permanently. But if it gets stuck in this astrobilome and then sent back into the system, or we just don't have fully formed bowel movements every day that's getting it out efficiently, preventing it from being reabsorbed, we can start to increase the risk of not only these estrogen dominant symptoms, but potentially, left unaddressed for a long time, potentially increasing our risk of these estrogen driven cancers. Because if we're reabsorbing used estrogen all the time and that's never fixed, you know, that obviously can be a risk. So it's important, you know, to understand the big link between our gut and our hormone health. And really, you know, you don't have to be thinking, oh my goodness, I need to pay for that test. That's the only way I'm going to be able to sort this out. No, of course, like I said, if someone has a very easy budget for it, great. But no, it doesn't have to be. You don't have to do those tests. I didn't have to do it. I just did it. I will remind you of some really helpful habits, food-wise, lifestyle-wise, that support our gut health and the balance of our bacteria and that astrobilome, so that we can prevent this recirculation of used estrogen. So the third change is increased gut permeability. This is also known as leaky gut. So I've talked about this on previous episodes. Episode 35 off the top of my head, I know I've talked about this because we talked about it in terms of autoimmunity. So this situation of leaky gut is another common issue. it's normally what we have to think about how to understand is that normally the gut lining acts like a fine mesh, a strong mesh that's where the, its cells are tightly packed together. There's little gaps, but they're very small. And those very small gaps are just small enough to allow nutrients to pass through, nutrients from our food that's sitting in the gut. But it keeps larger particles and toxins out. So undigested food particles and particular toxins, they stay out of the bloodstream. They stay inside the gut. They'll be passed out via a bowel movement or sort of processed in the liver. They will not go into circulation in the body. But stress, chronic stress, inflammation, gut infections, a poor diet, high in ultra processed foods, white flour, refined processed carbohydrates, and low estrogen can all start to weaken that gut lining, which creates bigger gaps that now start to let food particles, bacteria, you know, harmful bacteria and toxins to leak through into the bloodstream through those bigger gaps. That's what we don't want. And that's that situation of leaky gut or gut permeability. Now, your immune system then goes on high alert. It starts to create inflammation throughout the body. So again, another potential source of chronic inflammation. And that immune system response, it starts to contribute to symptoms like fatigue, brain fog, migraines, headaches, achy joints, skin flare-ups. It could be just breakouts, acne, autoimmune flares, or the onset of autoimmunity, the discovery of autoimmunity, even things like psoriasis, eczema, and then hormone imbalances, which is what perimenopause is, but it just starts to exacerbate those, and stubborn belly fat. All of these things can be a sign of this potential chronic inflammation coming from leaky gut potentially. Now, the fluctuations, the erratic nature of estrogen, the decline in progesterone, and then the eventual decline in estrogen, these are both anti-inflammatory hormones. So as they decline, that starts to make the gut lining even more vulnerable. So that's one of the reasons, again, why gut is more vulnerable during perimenopause, and especially postmenopause when we have definitely stopped making those hormones. Now, for some people, gluten can worsen the situation of leaky gut because it can increase a protein called zonulin, which opens up those gaps even more, makes them even wider. In some people, not in everyone. So a reduction in gluten foods or even an elimination for some people, it does have to be a complete elimination, like, you know, Crohn's disease, for example, inflammatory bowel disease, a complete elimination or celiac is needed. And it can be a game changer for some women, but for some, they might just need to reduce. You know, if we're somebody who is relying on gluten every single day, then I would definitely suggest we look at ways to reduce that reliance. So if we're eating, you know, let's say every day we have a wrap that's just made with, even if it's a whole wheat wrap, it's made with wheat, right? Wheat flour. And we're having that every day. And then we're having regular pasta for dinner. Maybe we have some good quality sourdough for breakfast, but it's still wheat, gluten. So that's quite a lot of gluten every day. And if that's the case, I would always want that person to suggest that they just experiment with reducing it and seeing if they start to feel better, or maybe eliminating it for a period of time and see if they feel better. And maybe it could be that you have a good quality slice of sourdough like once or twice a week, and that's it. And the rest of your meals are just naturally gluten-free, not because you're having to shop for gluten-free products or alternatives, but you're just naturally eating gluten-free. So, for example, in my diet, in my life, I, in terms of carbohydrates, I rely on things like brown rice, white rice, potatoes, starchy vegetables, quinoa, beans, lentils. My pasta is all made from either brown rice, which is naturally a gluten-free grain, buckwheat, which is a naturally gluten-free grain, or it's made from lentils or chickpeas. If I want to snack on the crackers, for example, I use oat cakes, which again are naturally gluten-free because they're made from oats. And then on a Sunday, I usually have a nice slice of sourdough with my breakfast. But otherwise, it's just a naturally gluten-free diet. So I'm not having to consider gluten-free products. I love a chocolate brownie here and there. And I know that the specific places to go to where I live, where they use gluten-free flour, or they just use, maybe it's made with almond flour or buckwheat flour. If I make it at home, I would use buckwheat flour. So it's just switching that focus away from your typical processed gluten foods over to stuff that's just naturally gluten-free, and that can make a big difference for some people. But it's not the only cause of leaky gut. As we said, it could be stress, gut infections, alcohol. The fourth issue that we tend to come up against is food sensitivities. So this can be, I hear this a lot from women that say, I've never been sensitive to any foods. As I'm moving through my 40s, I'm finding I'm having issues with certain foods that was not a problem before. Your sort of tolerance changes, because as your gut barrier weakens, if you do have this situation of leaky gut, your tolerance to certain foods will start to change over time. So you might suddenly react to foods that you've eaten for years without any issue, not because of the food itself, but because your immune system is now seeing those food particles where they shouldn't be. So this is why I don't really like food intolerance testing, because if we fix the gut lining, many food intolerances resolve. It's not the food itself, it's the leaky gut. So if we can solve the leaky gut situation, reduce that inflammatory response when these food particles come out into the bloodstream when they shouldn't because of a leaky gut, then we can resolve those food sensitivities. And of course, you have true intolerances like lactose or gluten intolerance, for example, if you're celiac. And you also have true allergies like peanuts, for example, where a person could have an anaphylactic shock, or prawns or shellfish. Those are different. That's not what I'm talking about when I talk about food sensitivities. But it's worth paying attention to patterns and how you feel after eating. The fifth thing is what's known as the gut-brain axis. So your gut and your brain axis means link, connection. Your gut and your brain are connected through what's known as the vagus nerve. And this relationship between the two, the gut and the brain, becomes especially relevant in perimenopause because, as I mentioned earlier, quite a lot, around 90% of our serotonin, our feel-good brain chemical, neurotransmitter, it's made in the gut. So when the gut is inflamed, imbalanced, leaky, then serotonin production can drop because we don't have this healthy environment anymore to support that production. So this can start to increase anxiety, low mood, irritability, poor sleep, and even depression-like symptoms that could be blamed entirely on hormones, or you're just depressed, when the gut is actually a big piece of this puzzle. So always something to consider. The sixth thing is constipation and reflux, very common as we move through perimenopause. It's not something I have noticed just yet, but I think, as I say, I do a lot of work to keep my gut in good shape because of obviously the work that I do. So it's like, you know, I have to live and breathe what I teach and what I do. And luckily, I think that has kept me from experiencing sort of constipation and reflux that a lot of women around my age, I'm nearly 46, have already started to experience. But the great news is that this is, I mean, it's not great, but it's good that the good news is that we can do a lot to support it. But we can become more susceptible to it. So that erratic nature of estrogen, its decline, that can start to slow gut motility, which is how the speed of the sort of gut contractions, and that can start to make constipation more of a thing, more common. That reduced motility combined with regular midlife stress, that we tend to have more stress than ever in our 40s. Life can feel a lot heavier in our 40s, a lot bigger, I should say. So combine that reduced motility with midlife stress, with microbiome changes, with leaky gut, it often starts to lead to bloating and IBS type symptoms that may not have existed before. And it is really common for so many women to just be dismissed with, oh, it's just IBS. It's just a syndrome of irritable bowel symptoms. There's nothing you can do. But there is. There's a lot that we can do. So estrogen basically helps to maintain what's known as the lower esophageal sphincter. So that's the muscle that prevents acid reflux. It prevents the food from coming back up, basically. And when estrogen drops, that muscle starts to weaken, and that can allow acid to move up into the esophagus, which is that muscle that leads up to the throat, causing heartburn. Stress can also trigger reflux, so it's often a double whammy. So there's a period of time, let's say about a year ago, where I do remember feeling increasingly stressed, significantly stressed. And I just had this, I started to notice a couple of evenings a week on the busier, more stressful days where I would just feel this very subtle heartburn with my meals. And I thought, right, okay, I know what this is. This is stress. So it's just really important to sort of listen to your body, try and piece things together. Stress is usually always at the root of a lot of things. And I just knew that was, if in my case, it was a thing. And I had some time off over Christmas, just had a bit of a reset, had a little interruption of the way things had, that sort of intensity that things had been. And it did start to, it just went away, and I've never had it since. So yeah, just being mindful that stress can trigger reflux, but it can just make it a double whammy because we've already got this physical situation where it can be more likely. And then blood sugar and gut is, blood sugar balance is strongly linked. So also that means insulin resistance and is also linked to gut health. So unstable blood sugar levels starts to feed the wrong microbes, specifically yeast like candida, and that those pathogenic, harmful bacteria strains. They absolutely love sugar. So if we're having, if we're eating in a way that is increasing our blood sugar levels constantly, eating lots of sugar, lots of refined carbohydrates. So that would be the typical white flour products, you know, wraps, bagels, baguettes, pies, pastries, that sort of thing. If we are eating a lot of those foods, then these yeasts and pathogenic bacteria, they love it. They feed off it and they grow and thrive. So balancing your blood sugar isn't always, it's not just about energy or weight. Of course, those things are extremely important, and general hormone health does rely on blood sugar balance for sure. But it's also important to consider it in terms of keeping your gut microbes healthy and reducing inflammation. So again, another source of chronic, potential source of chronic inflammation is blood sugar imbalances. And then that could also be driving yeast overgrowth and pathogenic bacteria overgrowth. So that's all the sort of facts, the information, but what can you do? So now more than ever, supporting your gut is so important for your hormone health, but for managing symptoms, more importantly, for really helping to reduce, completely eliminate certain symptoms as we move through perimenopause. And of course, beyond that, because this isn't just all about supporting perimenopause. We have a life beyond that as well, that we want to keep everything in check and feel good. Gut health is a big part of the puzzle. And I hope that you can see that now from what I've just explained. And I hope it hasn't been confusing or overwhelming. So of course, as I always say, let me know, send me questions, send me comments. You can email me, you can DM me on Instagram. So when it comes to working with clients one-to-one, I guide them through what's known as the 5R gut reset framework. So this is taught in functional medicine world, and it basically includes removing things that are impacting gut health negatively, replacing anything that might be missing. So it could be things like replacing digestive enzymes that might not be there, stomach acid that might not be enough of, beneficial bacteria. Re-inoculating, that's also about re-inoculating with replenishing beneficial bacteria. Repairing, so supporting that, the healing of that gut lining, sewing those wide holes back together so that now the gut can be impermeable again. And rebalancing. So these are the 5 R's, and you can revisit that in episode 35. I go through all of that in detail. So I would definitely encourage you to go back there for more. But here are just some key takeaways for today that you can just walk away with and start to do literally in your next meal and straight away. So daily habits would be chewing your food thoroughly. So I've just kind of picked the top line, what is just going to make a difference instantly. We're just not chewing our food enough. This goes for me as well. Every day I have to remind myself to put my knife and fork down between mouthfuls, finish my mouthful before I put the next one in. I think it can be very tempting. We're trying to get through a meal in a certain time. We just put the next mouthful in before we've even swallowed the first one that's in there. I'm trying to put less on my fork as well. And just chew until it's almost liquid before you swallow. Chew more than you would even think you need to. Avoid eating on the go or when you're stressed. That's not going to be conducive to turning on that digestive system. The brain isn't going to think it's time to digest food if you're busy, if you're moving around, if you're eating on the go. And create time for daily nervous system calm. So again, the brain does not prioritize digestion when we're breathing shallowly, we're stressed, we're running from A to B all the time, we're just not allowing any time to just sit and breathe. So really simple deep breathing for 3 minutes, 4-6 breathing into a count of 4, out through a count of 6. It's just stopping for a few minutes to just sit and breathe. Spending time in nature, any kind of meditation, mindfulness, activities, drawing, coloring. A 5 to 10 minute guided meditation on your favorite meditation app. looking at managing your life load. Where could you release some things? Where could you let go of some things? Where could you delegate? Where could you start saying no when you just keep saying yes? Where can you get some things off your plate to reduce overwhelm as much as possible? All of these things will be supportive. And then supplements, ideally these are guided by testing. But like I said, in the absence of test results, we can still have a big idea of what's going for a person based on their symptoms. So if you're working with someone like myself, a qualified nutritional therapist or other kind of functional medicine nutritional therapist, it's really helpful if you are guided by someone like me when it comes to knowing what to take and which, you know, brands and things, because there's so many supplements out there. But in terms of brands, you know, everyone's jumping on the bandwagon now of whether it's probiotics or menopause or perimenopause supplements. And you just don't really know who to trust because their marketing looks amazing. It's beautiful packaging and their website's lovely. So I do think it's helpful if you are guided. So it's about taking a high quality probiotic, really good quality brands from trusted labs, so that you know that what it says on the label is what you're actually going to get in your gut when you take it. It may be that somebody needs to supplement temporarily with stomach acid, also known as HCl, hydrochloric acid, or betaine, HCl betaine. That can be helpful. You could even try diluting a tablespoon or less of raw apple cider vinegar and a little bit of water and taking that before your meals. That can be helpful as well to encourage stomach acid. Nothing's more helpful to encourage stomach acid though than the sight and smell of your food, and taking that time to encourage saliva production before you start eating and then chewing really, really well. That is, you know, the most natural way to encourage it. But for some people, depending on their own unique situation, they may just need to temporarily supplement with stomach acid as well. Or it could be digestive enzymes. If we think symptoms wise that digestive enzyme capacity is probably low, the production just isn't there, or we have test results that show us that they're low. So taking a quality, well-rounded digestive enzyme with every meal can support that as well. Things like L-glutamine powder, that's a lovely gut healing, really helping to support that gut lining. Zinc carnosine, NAG, DGL, so that's deglycerized licorice, aloe vera, slippery elm, omega-3s, so fish oil, whether it's from eating oily fish or taking an omega-3 fish oil supplement, that's EPA and DHA specifically. These are all just really helpful nutrients to help heal and calm the inflammation of the gut lining and sew it back together. And removing inflammatory foods. So potentially that's gluten, not for everyone, but potentially if you're relying on processed gluten a lot, that can be something to consider, even if you just did it as a little trial. And refined carbohydrates like the white flour products I've mentioned, bagels, biscuits, cakes, wraps, even brown wraps, things that we seem seemingly healthy. Like I said, a whole wheat wrap or whole wheat bread or seed breads. Essentially, these are refined carbohydrates made with refined flour. So if we're heavily relying on those things, that can be a source of inflammation. Obviously, sugar, too much. We're all going to have a bit of sugar here and there. But if it's a daily thing, alcohol, too much high consumption of alcohol, and these ultra processed foods like a heavy reliance on processed cereal bars or protein bars, no matter how much protein they say they've got in them, you want to look at that ingredients list, and it's probably absolutely huge, and that's, you know, full of refined ultra processed ingredients. Gut healing foods that you can start to add in would be things like bone broth. So you can either make that yourself by simmering beef or chicken bones for up to 24 hours. That's how you start to release all the wonderful anti-inflammatory healing nutrients and amino acids from the bone. Chicken liver, if you can afford lamb and beef that's grass-fed, that is ideal. Oily fish, so sardines, salmon, mackerel, trout, herring, anchovies, eggs, colourful vegetables, colourful herbs, all the different types of herbs and spices. Dark green leafy veg, all the different colors of other kind of like bell peppers, purples, and, you know, purple onion, red onions, aubergine, all the different colors of veg. Healthy fats, so extra virgin olive oil, avocado, nuts, seeds, real butter, coconut oil, coconut milk. Fermented foods, if you can tolerate them. Some people have an issue with fermented foods if they're susceptible to histamine reactions, which can be very common as we move through perimenopause, when estrogen is actually higher than it's ever been before. At times, we can experience histamine reaction. So itchy, itchiness, itchy eyes, itchy nose, just itchy skin. So if you are susceptible to that, you might not tolerate fermented foods well. But if you do, then using a good quality raw sauerkraut, kimchi, really great to include a portion of daily. Prebiotic fibers that are found in things like onions, garlic, leeks, Jerusalem artichokes, asparagus, and then resistant starches that we find from something that's so easy is cooked and cooled potatoes and rice. So once or twice a week, you could be cooking some baby new potatoes. You could be cooking some rice and then you just have it the next day or later cold. So cooked and cooled potatoes and rice have been shown to include these really helpful resistant starches that help to encourage the growth of beneficial bacteria. So I think that's really cool. And beans and lentils also contain resistant starches. So really to wrap up today's episode, I just want you to really get that good understanding and have that knowledge that your gut health and your hormones are not separate systems. I mean, we class them as separate systems, of course, the endocrine system, the gut system, but they're in constant communication with each other. And when your gut becomes imbalanced, your digestion is imbalanced, it can start to ripple through your entire hormonal landscape, from your mood, your energy, your sleep, your weight, and to cycle symptoms, PMS, and inflammation. So supporting your gut is just one of the most powerful ways to balance your hormones, or support, I shouldn't say balance, because we can never achieve hormonal balance truly in perimenopause. It's a time of hormonal imbalance, but we can taper the landscape. I don't know if that's the right phrase. We can calm the landscape as much as we possibly can by supporting our gut health. It's one of the most powerful ways we can support our entire journey, our symptoms, our experiences. So I hope this has been helpful. I hope it's been empowering as ever. If you feel that you would like one-to-one support from me, I will be taking on a few clients before Christmas, which is not long away. It's like less than 2 months away. That's so scary. And so I will be taking on a few more before the end of the year. So drop me a message, either email me or message me on Instagram. My details will be in the show notes. Or you might want to join the Midlife Thrive membership. Inside there, although that's not one-to-one work, it's all group work, there is an entire module dedicated to gut health. The 5R gut reset is all in there for you to work through. You know, all the supportive handouts, everything you need to go through all of that yourself is in there. And of course, we have the monthly group calls for you to jump on each month when you have questions. You've got the online community to ask questions as well as you go along. But if you want real targeted personalized support, then that would be working with me one-to-one. So as ever, I hope you found this helpful and I'll see you in the next episode. Bye-bye. If you found this episode helpful, then please share it with anyone else who you think could benefit. And consider leaving a rating and a review, as this will help the podcast to reach and help more people. And if you need more guidance on your own health journey, you can grab my free guide, 6 Steps to Mastering Your Hormones in Your 40s, over at francescaliparotti.com, where you can sign up for your free copy. Or you'll also find the link in the show notes.